Good Wednesday afternoon, and welcome to the Long-Term Care Provider Call. I'm Mike Cook, Director for Long-Term Care. I want to remind you all the calls are muted, and this session is being recorded. We'll ask that you hold your questions until we get to the Q&A session, which is at the end of our program here. As always, if you have a question, you can call us at 405-271-6868, or you can email us at ltc@health.ok.gov. And if you would like to see our long-term care COVID-19 resources, those can be found at ltc.health.ok.gov. So we're going to get right into our policy and guidance, go to our general updates, and welcome James Jocelyn, our Assistant Deputy Commissioner.
Good afternoon, everyone. I just briefly would kind of update you on two things. One is the our surveillance folks are still working on the tool for the county-by-county guidance. I've received some initial take on that, and then I thought that they could improve on that. So that is still being worked on for the time being. Continue to use the link in the reopening plan. That's in the last paragraph, the bottom, on the last page of the plan under testing. There is a link there to information on how to click on their webpage. Just remind you that that link takes you to information on our epidemiological page, and you're going to go to our district breakouts. And on the district breakouts, you will see a map of the different counties in that district. And when you click on that county, your county in that district, a little box will pop up that will give you the case numbers for that county. And then you click on that number. And it then will show you a trend line for your county. So I wanted to reiterate that. Then the other thing is the grant. We worked it up, got feedback, have reworked it. So I think we're close, but there's lots of moving pieces with that. It looks like it's going to be a fairly simple and straightforward process where you select your facility. There's some federal accounting pieces that have to go with that, that identify your FEIN for your facility and TIN number and DUNS number and stuff like that. That's close to being worked out. We think it will be relatively painless, but, you know, that's a term that has lots of different meanings, I guess. And that's it. That's all I've got.
Okay, thanks, James. Next, we have what we're calling the facility reopening guidance. Basically, we've taken the phased reopening and long-term care document and created some forms that can be easily used to submit. And to talk on that, Paula Terrell.
Okay, so we just kind of wanted to try to simplify it for you guys. There are several things you have to report to us, so we've got this packet put together that will be available on our website, and the first thing is going to be a form that you can complete to provide the information about your infection preventionist to us, and then you'll need to provide and attach your certificates to show that you did complete infection preventionist training. And then we have also attached the infection prevention and control risk assessment that is there for you to complete, and remember to adapt that for your facility type. And then there's also a page that directs you about what you need to include in your monitoring plan that you need to develop. And then we have also provided a monitoring tool that you can use to document practices in your facility. You need to remember that when you're monitoring, you need to do it on all shifts. And then this is a tool that you can either use or you can kind of use it as a guide to how to create your own. And then there's also an additional page for you to report your phase status to us. And so we thought it'd be very helpful if you would do this all in a package so we have all of your data together for you in one.
Yeah, we have two people that we're pulling back into the office as we are looking at slowly reopening, and Michelle Rainey and Chris Bundy will be evaluating those. If you have questions, it's still, you know, that same email address, ltc@health.ok.gov. But if you call and you have questions, you could ask for Michelle Rainey or Chris Bundy. They're here now, and like she said, as of today, we have started reviewing those. Hopefully, you know, we'll possibly get some of that out this week and get it turned around for you. In addition to that, we are going to push this package out, and we talked about, are we going to send it out? We're going to put it on the website, and then we may send it to the list.
Yeah, we'll email it through the distribution list, email the link. Yeah.
Okay. So we will get that out later today. Up next is our Civil Monetary Penalty Reinvestment Fund update, and Lovetta's here to bring us up to date.
Good afternoon, everyone. Every week I leave and I go, oh, I forgot to tell them this or that. So I decided I'll start off with some information I want you to know about the COVID-19 technology application process. Our website, at this time, I would like for you to stop using our website to get the application, because the application that's linked on our website is not the correct application. I apologize for that. I'll try to get that corrected this week. But temporarily stop using the website if for those that have not already applied. If you have sent us an application prior to June the 15th and you have not received an email from us or an approval letter, you may want to give us a call or an email, and I'll give you the contact information at the end of my report. I would like for, if you are part of a management company or a corporation, it would be great if you coordinate which one of you will send in or prepare the CMP application for technology, because we're coming across a few duplicates. Also, there's about 45% of the eligible facilities have not submitted an application or made a request for funding. So next week I'll try to reach out to those facilities to find out if they have barriers or just don't need the technology. But if anyone needs application assistance, you know, again, I'll give you the contact information to reach out to our department, because we will be glad to assist you with completing the application. If you're faxing or mailing, we found out that some people, because the application was in PDF format only, some people would print it off, hand prepare the application and fax or email or mail, and we're teleworking, so we're not in the office. So those applications, if our coworkers scan them in and send those to us, we get them, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. Otherwise, I check every Wednesday. So there might be a slight delay from the date that you send it to the date that I realize we received it, because I have to physically come into the office to pick up some of those applications. And the other thing I wanted you to know is we have approved about $260,000 to purchase technology. $0 have been paid out. So if you're waiting on a payment, I'm working with our finance department and our and we call it the Office of Management and Enterprise Services to get you your payment. So they probably won't go out until about after the 4th of July. So please be patient, but I am working on getting you your payment. So application processing process. We received 91 applications. That represents 164 facilities. We reviewed 85 of those applications. That represents 158 facilities. And we have not reviewed 6 applications, and that represents 6 facilities. And that is the end of my report today. Thank you.
Thanks, Lavetta. So next up, we have...
I forgot.
Go ahead.
I'm so sorry. My contact information. We can be reached at cmp.health.gov, or my cell phone number, because as I stated, I'm teleworking, is 405-651-8179. Today is not a good day to call, but any other day, yes, give me a call if you need some information. Thank you.
Thanks, Lavetta. So our next is the Telegen update, and we have Sherry Longacre on. Go ahead, Sherry.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for having me on the call today. So my name is Sherry Longacre, and I'm a Senior Quality Improvement Facilitator at Telegen. And as many of you know, Telegen is the quality improvement organization for the state of Oklahoma. As I've shared in the past, we have received new directives from CMS and shifted focus to the quality improvement initiatives that CMS is identifying through their own internal processes, and we're receiving those referrals every Friday. They're time sensitive, and we have to have them, the QII plan, completed and submitted to CMS within 30 days of that initial referral. I have been and had the pleasure of collaborating with Janine Kitts at the Oklahoma State Department of Health, and we're identifying resources to share with our nursing homes, and I know Janine is out on site providing consultations to assist nursing homes with their infection prevention and control programs. So we are working together with that. If you would like tools to identify the gaps in your infection prevention and control program, please reach out. We have a fillable CDC infection prevention and control assessment form that makes life just a little bit easier. We also have a fishbone and a PDSA form that we can share with you as well to kind of help guide you through your quality improvement process also. And we are continuing to provide technical assistance with NHSN. So if you are still having problems, please reach out if you're not still unable to gain access to NHSN. We do not have control over SAMS or NHSN or how long it takes to receive a response, but we can help troubleshoot and we can help walk you through the process or share language that can assist in accelerating those email responses. So please just reach out. That's what we're here to do, is to help our nursing homes. And again, I'll share my email address is slongacre@telegen.com. And I would also like to share that CMS is sending those penalty notification letters through the key system, so make sure you're checking in that area. Telegen is leading the National Nursing Home Training Series this week on Thursday, June 25th at 3 p.m. So Dr. Jane Brock and I will be discussing PPE strategies for COVID care, and you can register at qioprogram.org. So we'd love it if you'd join us. Because Oklahoma is representing, I would also like to encourage you to visit our website at telegenqioprogram.com and register for Telegen QI Connect, and that allows you to connect with us and join us so that we can share our educational offerings, our tools, and assistance. CMS has extended the registration process through the fall, so please join us. And you can either contact me by email or by my office phone number. It's 405-810-3224. I look forward to connecting with you soon. And I'll turn that back over to you, Mike. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you, Sherry. Next is actually one of the things Sherry was talking about. It's the National Healthcare Safety Network, where facilities are to report at a minimum every 7 days. And so I did get a report this week from CMS. I don't know if it can be released or not, but it does show me how many facilities. We have approximately 308. nursing homes in the state of Oklahoma. And I am showing, based on this list, that we have almost, you know, it's a pretty good percentage. We only have less than 10%. So there's 26 facilities that CMS is reporting to me that have not provided data. So the information that I am receiving is showing me the initial enforcement remedy, which was $1,000, and then on the second infraction, it was $2,500. And of the 26, 24 of them are now into the $2,500 for the imposed on the civil monetary penalty. So I would encourage you to reach out to Sherry and get that assistance, because this should be something that you report only once a week. You can do it more than that, but to get your information in there and get off of this enforcement track. Hey, just out of curiosity, Sherry, do you have that same list from CMS? If she's still there.
Hi. So, yes, CMS did share a list with us as well. And I have sent an email out to some facilities. I have not sent an email out to the new list, and I'll reach out to them as well.
Excellent. Thanks so much. So if you're getting a call from Sherry, it means you have a CMP outstanding now. These are automatically imposed out of the central office in Baltimore. So be sure to get off this list. Thanks, Sherry. On the next thing, the COVID-focused surveys. So we're currently working on phase two, which is to complete every nursing home by the end of July 31st. And to date, we've done 215 phase two COVID-focused surveys. 197 of them to facilities, to nursing homes, 16 additional, and two that we have gone to three times. So we had 197, we've been there one time, we've been to 16 of them two times, and we've been to two of them three times. What that looks like is, nursing homes, we've visited 170 since the date is April 4th when those started. So 170 out of those 308. So we are more than halfway there, and that's about right. You know, we're rolling in on the last week in June here, and our expectation is to move right on up through July the 31st and have those completed. I can also tell you we have visited 25 assisted livings and done COVID-focused surveys. And then CMS put a new criteria together. It's called 30 days, and that was a couple of weeks back, but we have not received the data. We also received the data this week for those facilities, and their criteria is a 10% COVID positive, a 20% COVID positive, or 10 deaths. And we showed there were 17 facilities that CMS wanted us to look at that fell within those ranges. And that's based on the data that you are providing to the National Healthcare Safety Network. And of those 17, we had 10 that we had already been at since 5-1. So of all those 17, we really only have 7 that we have to go back out. Can't tell you exactly, but I know that we're probably going to be finished with them this week and have all of those done. Then CMS is sending out one more round of these, is my understanding. So that's not too bad to have more than half of them already done before we receive the list. If you need an infection control consult or you have questions about reopening, be sure to give us a call and reporting. I can't emphasize how important it is to continue to report to the National Healthcare Safety Network as well as long-term care and to acute disease if you have any suspicions or suspected cases. So we kind of had a short list today, and we are going to move on into our James is holding up a finger, so I'm hoping that he has a question.
No, I did, or two more things that I did, that I going back to my notes to did update. So we are working to get the list of facilities that's published in the Daily Executive Order report that lists all facilities with their case counts. They're working on a methodology to identify how old the cases are in that facility so that there will be a way for that will show that these are not current cases, these are more than 14 days old. So they're working on something for that. And then the other thing is the question came through about nurse aid registry testing and that the nurse aid trainees, I guess there was some communication that nurse aid trainees or under someone heard that nurse aid trainees could not apply now for testing. They can apply and make application to the nurse aid registry under the exception application that's out there on the web. The problem is finding a place to test right now is still the challenge, but they can apply for the exception and to test at any time.
Thanks, sir. So we're going to move into our Q&A. Pam, you can get us started and tell them how to do it.
Yeah. So you'll be prompted, and you can press 10. Your call will be taken in order, so you'll hear those prompts right now.
This conference is now in question and answer mode. To alert the speaker that you have a question, press 1, then 0.
One more thing before we take our first question. It's been brought to our attention that CMS did approve as an equivalent course the infection control and infection prevention and control course that was developed by AHCA. It's equivalent in content and material. So that is an acceptable training if you have taken the AHCA infection prevention course. There is a certificate that we've been provided that will be you can submit for your documentation.
Good note. Okay, let's start with our first caller. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, this is Carolyn Boggess, Director of Nurses at Edmond Healthcare Center in Oklahoma. My question is, we are and have been a completely COVID-free facility. And everything I've read on reopening is based on how many COVID cases you have or had in your facility. And I honestly, with all my heart, do not believe, I believe reopening puts our residents more at risk than staying at, like in phase two right now. Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, we have had others express. I mean, obviously, there's no vaccine yet, so everybody is still very concerned. You know, the phased reopening is put out there so that facilities come up with their own plan, and we review that. That's specifically why we did not put out you have to do ABC, but...
Right. I'm working on mine, and I feel pretty good about what I've written, but it was from the May 18th, is what we're adopting, is the May 18th reopening phase information from, May 18th from CMS. Is that the one we should be using to look at what the criteria are, or is there another more recent one?
So we did issue the phase reopening, the guidance on phase reopening in long-term care facilities that was issued through our distribution network and is now out there on our long-term care COVID page that has additional details.
Okay, and it's where I'm new to Oklahoma and I'm not familiar with their rules or how everything. I was from Texas, and so if you could give me that website one more time, I would appreciate it.
So if you go to the health department, so you, what's LTC?
LTC.health.ok.gov. And
Okay, I see it. It's right here. LTC at healthok.gov. Yeah, with all the dots.
Go there. So go to the COVID page that you see linked at the upper left.
The COVID. Is it just COVID or
COVID-19?
COVID-19. Okay, page on the upper left.
All right. Why don't you do this? Why don't you email us?
Okay.
And we'll send you the link. How's that?
Oh, my God. You're wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, I have a question about state reportable form 283, specifically when we identify an employee that's positive for COVID. We have been doing individual reporting forms for each and every resident that we would have identified as being a potential exposure risk. Do we have to do that? Can we make one form and list all of the residents that potentially could be affected?
You are certainly free to do that. We will accept that either way.
Okay. I just was double-checking, making sure we'll get that right.
You bet.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi. Regarding county reporting, would you consider a simple red light, green light system for whether a county is eligible to go to phase three?
We are considering that.
Okay, thank you. I have one more question. If a facility has already submitted their IPC plan pre-template that's going to be posted today on the website, will they have to resubmit, or will you just check that for consistency and approve that based on what's already been submitted? How will that work for those facilities?
We'll review what you have submitted, and if there's anything extra that's needed, we'll email you and ask you.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, I have a question. We had a student who is a CNA. She was from Russia. Her mom and dad came 2 weeks ago, and they stayed quarantined. We took her off work 14 days, and then we asked that they be all tested before she could come back to work. She went to, and her family, they all went to get the health department yesterday. They wouldn't test our employee, only her mom and dad, and said she didn't meet criteria, and she explained that she was wanting to come back to work. So we ended up paying for it at the urgent care, and I was just wondering when the health department potentially might, I just don't know if, am I being unreasonable for the standard that I want her to get tested, or is it, yes, we still need to get her tested, and y'all are going to work with us on when they won't tell us no, or how's that going to work?
This is Rocky McIlvaney. Which county or which facility did you try to
Beatles Nursing Home. I'm Dana Jordan, and my which county is our health department?
Woods County, you said?
Yeah.
Woods County. I'm sorry. I thought you were saying which county.
Yeah.
Woods.
I was under the impression that our agency had opened those up to be able to test folks that were wanting to get tested. If you'll send an email to Mike or to the long-term care, we'll find out and get you a reply back.
So did they offer an alternate site to go for testing?
Well, they tested the parents, but said she didn't meet criteria, and we run into that all the time with our employees, that they don't meet criteria, and it's based on exposure, not symptoms, and they're only basing it on symptoms for our employees for whatever reason, and I'm just super confused about it. So we've just been paying for it, which to me doesn't seem right.
And each time you've gone to the health department, it's been Woods County?
That's the only one near us, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. If you'll send a note to the long-term care inbox, we'll get you a reply back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Good afternoon. My question is, we receive by our Merck N95s. On the exterior of the box, I observed that there was an expiration date and they have expired. Can we use these N95s?
Yes. So there was testing done on those N95s that found that they were still valid. We went through our supply and sorted through that, and if they've shipped it out, then they've made an evaluation that those are still eligible to be used.
Are the surveyors aware of that, just in case I get nailed?
Fair enough. Well, I will tell you that surveyors generally will not need to wear N95s because they're not providing direct care or in close contact with patients, so a surgical mask will be fine for them.
But she's talking about...
Sometimes they want to see that we have our supplies and so forth, so if they were to really dig in with a pick and shovel, well...
Yeah,
we will make sure, this is Mike, we'll make sure that they understand that those have not expired.
Okay, thank you kindly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, caller.
While we're on the call right now. Cool. Hi, just wanted to ask for clarification. If we are accepting a resident that has already been quarantined at the facility they are coming from and they test negative after their 14-day quarantine, we can accept them within the 48 hours of that negative test is what we have been told previously. Is that correct or was that misunderstood?
Where were they quarantined? A hospital?
I'll call you back soon as
we're... Yeah.
No.
All right.
No, that's not our understanding. That negative test at the end of their experience at the hospital is not saying that they're definitely negative. It's a snapshot in time. They're really supposed to be quarantined. If they've gone out to the hospital and come back to you, they're supposed to be quarantined for 14 days.
But they've been quarantined at the hospital for 14 days, leaving the hospital, coming to the facility. That's not good enough. It still needs another 14 days. What was the point of the previous 14-day quarantine?
We don't know.
I mean, that was the point. They were quarantined there because we could not quarantine at the facility. So if they have been quarantined at the previous facility or hospital for 14 days and tested negative, then we cannot accept them without quarantining again?
So I think you may be talking about a different situation than just someone going to the hospital. I think what you probably need to do is give us a call and let us talk about it and what the certain circumstances are in this case.
Okay, and second question. When they come out and do the testing of the entire facility, if we've had no COVID whatsoever, and when they come do the entire testing, and then if they come back with a positive test when they have been totally asymptomatic, what is the expectation then?
Well, the team will work with you on what your response needs to be, whether it's staff or residents. We've asked facilities to have a cohorting plan in place for the resident, how those plans that's part of what, if that's not already nailed down, that's part of what needs to get nailed down is what happens when you have a positive test. What is the facility going to do? And to have conversations with the county, with the local task force, with our acute disease service in Janine, with the infection preventionist that the facility hires to develop that plan.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes. We wanted to know if goggles could be worn in place of a face shield.
Sure, they can. They're eye protection. I will just say I think the face shield provides you with a little more protection because you've got another covering over your whole face. But, yes, they do meet the requirements.
Well, just to be on the extra safe side, we live adjacent, or our facility is adjacent to Tulsa County, and with the rise in cases in Tulsa County, we don't have any positive cases in the facility at this time, but we've just implemented face shields as a, or goggles as an extra precaution.
Good idea.
Also, when we have people in quarantine, they're not displaying symptoms, they haven't been COVID positive, they're just in quarantine because of hospital stay. Does an N95 have to be worn for those residents?
Yes. I mean, if you're providing direct care to them, you need to be wearing an N95.
And also, we asked a question about the doubling up.
Yeah.
For those people that are quarantined, do they have to be in a private room?
They need to be in that room by themselves, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi, I have two questions. The percentage positivity by county, is that on the website somewhere and I'm just not able to find it? Has that been updated?
It is not. So,
okay.
So just to reiterate that we are working on developing a specific reporting tool by county for our facilities that's in development. In the interim, what you have available to you are the data that's provided in the daily executive order reports and the weekly epidemiology report and on our website by following the links that I provided.
Okay. And then my next question was on page 18 of the phased reopening plan. It talks about where there's an upward trajectory of documented cases in the county within a 7-day period. Where do I get those numbers to my calculations?
So that goes back to we are working on a specific report that our facilities, our providers will have access to. Our thinking is that we will include that as a part of the weekly epidemiological report. So every week, there will be a report that comes out that shows here's the latest for each county. Looking back over 3 weeks is the discussion, and so that you can see what's gone on with the case rates in those counties. So there will be more. So right now, what you have available is the data that's available for your county on cases and the trend line that you see in following the link that was provided to you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Go ahead, caller.
We are trying to discern with looking at the trend line, it dates back to June 1st and shows us on an upward trajectory for Woods County. But we know that the cases in our county have been resolved, and we're wondering what we're going to be judged upon, where that trend line sits or what the actual status is in the county.
So I missed part of it. You're looking back to June 1st?
Well, that's what the trend line goes to on your link.
So that surprises me. The county specific was going back further than June 1st before.
No.
So I'm curious about what you're looking at.
Excuse me, June 4th. It goes, June 4th is the last date on our county trend line.
Oh, that's the last date showing on your county trend line.
Yes, okay. And it shows an increase.
Okay. So that surprises me that you don't have more recent data. The ones that I've seen, I thought showed more recent data. So would you do me a favor? Would you email me?
I emailed you the link.
Okay. All right. So let me look at it, and then I'll follow up with you. How's that?
That would be great. And then I also wanted to seek clarification. Are we required to start in phase one, or would we potentially start in phase two or three, depending on the situation in our facility in their county?
Yeah, so you're right. You start based on the situation in your facility in the county. So you might be at phase three or phase two or phase one.
Okay. So if we have no cases in our facility and...
You're not phase one, probably, but if you've got a high... If you've got mushrooming case incidents in your county, then you might... You know, if you read the header of phase one, it describes that that standard applies when there is... And I'm looking for the page now. It says... where there's heightened virus spread in the community specific healthcare limitations.
So would a, we have Mike's Nursing Home, and I've had 28 days of negative, no COVID. And the county is trending down, what phase would I be in?
Phase three.
So if we have had zero cases in our facility and our last reported date of onset for a positive test was June 4th, in my way of looking at it, if it's not going up, it's trending down, right? If those cases
yeah,
are recovered.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, okay. So if you have that data, you talk to the county or whatever, and you know that, then I would certainly plan from that. The fourth is your last case, and I don't know how many there were on the third, but if there were five, or let's say if there was just one case on the fourth and there were two cases on the third, or even if there were zero cases, there was just a one case in the last 14 days, and it's been, what's today, the 24th? Oh, so you're 10 days?
Yeah.
So you're 10 days out, but with one case, you know, it's certainly not evidence of community transmission going on at this point. It's a conversation to have. Anyway, so call me and let me look at it, and we'll go through it. Sounds like you're in good shape.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I just wanted some further clarification on the quarantine. We've had several of the infection surveys, and we've had a surveyor mention the N95 mask on the quarantine hall, and we've not really heard it in any of the other infection surveys, which I'm not at all being critical. We appreciate the feedback and the great partnership through all this, and it changes so fast. But all quarantine, you guys want the N95 worn, and when I read the CDC guidance on that, it kind of says if their COVID status unknown, that we would require the N95, and so even if they've been tested in the hospital for a negative, we're still going to assume they're unknown. Could you just give me a little further clarification, Paula?
Yes, I will. That negative test is not required, and it is just a snapshot in time. It means on the day they did that test, they were negative. They're unknown because they've been in an environment that you had no control over. You didn't know what they were exposed to during that, and so they are expected to be quarantined for 14 days, so you wait the full incubation period to be sure that they don't develop symptoms. And because of that, they're considered an unknown, and you are required to wear an N95 for direct care. It's close and personal with this resident where you're going to be in their space. You might be giving them a bath, providing incontinent care, helping them transfer or toilet, You need to protect your staff and be sure that you're not potentially taking something to other residents.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, I have a question in regard to the CMA and CNA applications. What is the best way for them to submit those?
You're talking about the application for the exception?
Yes.
Well, you caught me off guard on that. I believe that they have on the Nurse Aid Registry page, and I believe you can get there by going to nar.health.ok.gov. I believe at the top of that page they put all of the information applicable to the training exceptions and everything, and have linked the training exception form right there.
It does have that there. It just doesn't tell me what is the best way to send it in. I have the address. Email it? Okay.
Okay, so just email it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Go ahead. Star 6. Next. Go ahead. Caller?
I was just wanting some clarification on the phases. I've emailed everything to you guys. Do you guys send an email back to approve it before we move on, or we just move on as we see fit?
When we review it, we will let you know if it's approved or if we need more information.
In the absence of approval, move on. Just move on. If there's something that we see as a flag, we'll let you know.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi, my question is, if we're actually a COVID facility and we have taken an admission and realized that they had a diagnosis, I guess, that required a level 2 PASAR, but looking under the CMS, you know, the 1135 waiver, we knew that we had 30 days, but when we called today because the resident, we admitted them yesterday, spoke to Karen Navarro, and she directed us that that was not correct information and that we should have reached out prior to the admission to get the level 2 scheduled.
Okay, so, and who do you normally schedule that with?
Well, I mean, we usually call that division, but I thought we had at least 30 days. I mean, basically, she was not happy that we admitted the patient, but it was a facility that needed help because the resident was COVID positive and they needed the resident transferred. So I thought we were covered under the 30-day guide. You know, we had 30 days, but she made the comment that that is no longer valid. And I just want to find out if that's accurate or not.
Okay. Yeah, so the DHS does the staff do the PASAR review. So if they were not aware of the 1135 waiver, that's possible.
Okay.
Just send an email. Once you send an email to us and to them, explaining here's what you were operating under and the 1135 waiver. And, you know, DHS, you know, it's one of the, well, I'm speculating here, but DHS may have a law or rule that of their own that requires the PASAR that they didn't waive. And so even though the feds did a waiver, because it's in the DHS law or rule, they're still requiring. So that's all I can tell you. But, I mean, you're certainly acting in good faith, and I think you just follow through with them.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
My question is pertaining to the packet that we'll be completing when those are sent out. And when we complete that packet and we send it in and Chris or Michelle review that packet, then do they get back with us to let us know if the packet was approved or do we just assume it was?
No, they'll get back with you and let you know if it was, and if it wasn't, if they have more questions, they'll get back with you about that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Go ahead, caller.
Yes, sir. On the trainees for the CNA training, are they allowed to feed as long as they've went through the facilities training?
Yes. We've got the same guidance out there for feeding assistants that I don't remember exactly how it reads, but there is and if you go to the Nurse Aid Registry webpage, nar.health.ok.gov, there's information on the feeding assistance as well. But it's, as I recall, it's similar.
Okay. And question number two. I recently went through my COVID survey, and I got a tag for inappropriate use of a mask, because a lot of the residents and even some of the employees, like, they had their mask on, but, like, for example with me, mine's always sliding down off my nose. Okay, and then another facility that I'm very familiar with, a lot of theirs didn't even have a mask. And that administrator told me that mask is not a regulation. Is there an ELF or an L tag policy for wearing a mask?
This is the deal. It's that you need to be following the recommendations from CMS and CDC regarding all of this, and that's best practice right now. And so we need for you to follow best practices.
Yes, and you know, after I got to reading, I did explain to that administrator that I believe that the information did come from CDC, because I read it where CDC does recommend that residents wear a mask.
Yeah, you can also go to the State Operations Manual, Appendix PP, and read on F880 on infection control, and that will show you exactly what we cite and where that clarification comes from.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, sir. My question is regarding last week, you know, we were talking about getting our plan together for reopening and addressing the testing of our staff members. And I think you guys had put out an example, like 25% of your staff on like a weekly or regular basis. I contacted our local health department to kind of talk about how we would go about setting this up. And they were under the impression that I would get a hold of a private lab. Is that true?
Yeah, so there's been no provision made for whatever testing that facilities might do of their own staff on a regular basis.
So that is probably a decision. Okay, so we could not send them to our local health department?
I'm not saying that staff might not go through swab pods, you know, that we're open for testing, but you know, but as a regular practice to send or to do a group, there's no provision for that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. I didn't quite catch the very beginning of your conversation. There was something said about the monitoring plan and tools for the infection control. Are those available yet? I didn't understand.
We do have those. We just have not posted them to the website. We intend to have that posted today, and we're also going to email that out. So if you're getting the notifications for meetings and agendas, you'll also get this.
Okay, and one more question. I think this mainly pertains to my administrator, but I'm listening for her. I think her name was Levita. She said something about stop using an application.
So there, so CMS provided under the CMP reinvestment funds that are the CMP funds paid by nursing homes, and it's limited to nursing and skilled nursing facilities, they have access to an application to apply for CMP funds for connective devices to aid in visitation and telehealth.
Okay, gotcha. All right, I think that was it for right now.
Thank you.
Thanks. Go ahead, caller. Star 6. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
First time, go ahead. Long-time listener. I appreciate everything you guys are doing. I do have a quick question, though, and that's if we have staff members going to give blood at the Red Cross, they're apparently doing antibody tests. If they show that they have antibodies, are they going to be required to have other mandatory tests at work?
We're aware of no such requirements, and we have none.
So that means what?
Means so you have so I don't know what to tell you. If someone tests positive for antibodies, I think that the next step is that they go get tested to see if they currently have active virus, because there's a difference between having antibodies and an active virus. But it's possible that they already had COVID and they were asymptomatic the whole route through, are no longer transmitting the virus, and like lots of people today have the antibodies, but otherwise go on with their lives and hopefully are immune from future catching the disease in the future.
Okay, so when it comes to the mandatory testing within our community, are they going to be exempt from that if they are positive with antibodies?
I think it's too early. We don't have guidance on that at this point. When that comes up and the facility is going through facility-wide testing, you would communicate to the county their status.
Okay. And is this guidance going to come from the CDC or from your department?
Well, the CDC is who we're taking the lead from.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, caller. Hello? Star 6 to unmute.
Yes. We were going through the plan, and it did not address. We have not allowed home health except for hospice in our building since we went on lockdown. And there really was not an area that simply addressed the home cares. Our home cares are wanting to come in. We've been able to provide the care. We've had the staff to continue walking in the hallways and doing exercises, but we realize that we're taking, and we have not been charging for those extra responsibilities because they would be payable under Medicare. So my question is, in going through the plan that we have ready to send out as soon as we fill out the stuff you just sent out today. We've done all of our training. We've filled out everything. We think we can go directly into phase 3. But can we allow our home health agencies back in before we get your approval on our reopening plan, or do we need to wait until we get the approval for the reopening?
You can go ahead. And healthcare is addressed under the essential, non-essential healthcare personnel.
Okay. Can we ask them not to bring their equipment in?
The facility has the prerogative to establish procedures that they believe are in the best interest of protecting their residents.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hello. We can.
Okay. I've got just a couple of questions. We had a resident that tested positive in the little facility-wide testing. As soon as we got the results, we tested her twice, 24 hours apart, and those both came back negative. We were wanting to see if she, what the status is on that resident. Did they label it as a false positive? Are they still saying she was positive?
So,
how do I find out that information?
So you contact our acute disease service, and you may already have the number for that based on prior communications. Do you?
No, I do not.
All right. All right. Go ahead. I'll look it up. If you
okay.
Want to
The next thing, on our reopening plan, you know, we had talked to y'all last week about she said that they didn't have, if they went out to, you guys talked about if they went out to a doctor's appointment and we felt that it was a controlled environment, we didn't have to do the 14 days. But on the phase reopening plan, it says we do, and you guys were going to check into that. Have y'all updated any of that or re-released it? Or?
We have not
okay.
done that yet, but our guidance continues that if that was a controlled visit that you're confident about, then you can. In fact, some of the guys, I was reading some of the guidance says use observation rather than quarantine.
Okay.
So you see that in there, and maybe that's the terminology that we should use is
okay.
to use observation. But our prior guidance on that type of supervised medical visit continues.
All right. And the last thing I had was on assisted livings. I know all through there it says, and she just addressed it, that they would like for them to follow it just like we are. How do we get everyone on board with that? Do we just tell them, you know, like ours are recommendations, but we still follow them? To get them to understand that y'all are grouping the ALs and the RCFs in there as well with the long-term cares.
So we are not. We
okay.
provided a template that has that is for nursing facilities in the phase reopening plan. But the first page of the document explains that in recognition of some of the differences that are out there, those other facilities are to use the template as a guide, but then refer to the CDC guidance for their facility type
okay.
to modify that template to their population and their assessment of risk.
Gotcha. All right, that explains it. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Caller, yeah, so for the prior caller, the number for acute disease is 405-271-4060.
Go ahead, caller. Hello, star six.
Hello.
Hello.
We have a quarantine floor in our facility for people who returned from a hospital or admitted from a hospital. And I wanted to make sure that I understand what I guess she's one of the nurses said that you have to have every person who's in quarantine status in a private room. They can't cohabit.
Correct.
Okay, so that is thank you.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Carl.
Hi. I have ICF IID facilities, and we are planning on doing three different phases. My specific question is, each of my small houses, can I be patient-specific on what phase the patient or client is in, or do I have to have the whole house in phase two, for example?
You have the discretion to design something, and kudos to you for thinking about that and designing something that takes into account the different capacities and health risks of your residents and clients.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to be safe and sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Go ahead, caller. Hello? Next. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, I'm going back to the quarantine with the mask for Paula.
Okay.
She's saying that if they're quarantined, they have to wear the N95 mask.
Correct.
Okay, well, our N95s have not been fit tested yet.
Okay, so then you go to the second choice, and that would be a surgical mask, and if you could wear a face shield with it, that'd be even better.
Okay, so...
have eye protection on, but the face shield gives a little bit more protection.
Okay, so we can use the surgical mask, the face shield, and eye protection.
Yes.
Okay, that's all I needed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, caller.
Yes, I was wanting to get some clarification on moving to phase two from phase one. I had a couple of positive test results from residents. Two that were completely asymptomatic, no symptoms at all whatsoever. We have since received two negative test results on each resident. Wanting to move to phase two and try to do some visitation, but I'm kind of confused. I guess on page six it talks about resolution being 14 days from the day the case was identified. I can't go by the symptoms because we never had any. And then over on page 18 in the appendix for the testing guidance, it says movement to phase two must be followed by resolution of the last resident case plus 14 days. So, and I moved to phase two, you know, since the case was first identified, since we don't have symptoms, or do I have to wait until we receive the second negative result?
Wait until you receive the second negative. So you're using the test-based strategy instead of the symptom-based strategy because there were no symptoms. So you're using the test-based. So when you read the CDC guidance on that, is that with that test, then you tack on 14 days, and what you're waiting for is manifestation of anyone else in the building that may have acquired the infection.
Okay, just a recommendation. I don't know if y'all want to look at that again. It just is misleading on the phase two metrics where it says suspected case identified. I mean, we identified the positive result, you know, 14 days ago, but if we're having to go by the second negative test result plus 14 days, they're totally different.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Are the military bases in Oklahoma that some of us are next to, do they report they're positive to you all?
Do military bases report their positives?
Positive to the state, like everybody else. Okay, what I'm asking... Go ahead.
Yeah, so any lab or hospital that has a positive result reports to the state.
Okay, even if It's a military base that they're taking the labs on through a military hospital.
So I don't have the answer to that. Rocky, do you?
I don't. We could look at the labs that report, but sometimes the lab is not actually the facility that's actually doing
right.
the test. It could be sent out.
What I would say is, and we can, we'll contact them too, or I may get an alert while we're talking here from our acute disease folks who are listening, but the number for acute disease is 271-4060. That's 271-4060, and that would be a question that you and we could direct to them.
Okay. My concern is because we have a military base in the same
sure.
camp, if the numbers reporting, we're not looking at true numbers.
Right. I understood your thinking immediately. It's like, yeah, what if there's something going on in the base? It's not, we're not catching through our regular surveillance network.
Okay, thank you.
I would also say that there's an email for acute disease. It's Adam David, adservice@health.ok.gov. Go ahead, caller.
Okay, the other question I had is the breakout by county link. Where is that located? I don't find it in any of my emails.
So do you have the long-term care reopening plan?
I do. It's in there.
Okay. Go to the last page.
Okay.
And I cringe every time I say this now, but it's the last paragraph on the last page
okay.
in the testing guidance. There's a
Thank
link
you.
There, and it explains how to pull up the information.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller. Hello? Next. Go ahead, caller.
Hello. I just wanted to clarify, we are assisted living. We do not have to submit a plan for reopening, or we do?
You do. Yeah, people call it the plan for what's to be submitted is your infection prevention documentation, your infection, the control risk assessment that was done, and your monitoring plan. It's not your reopening plan. Okay, it is those other documents are to be submitted and approved by the department.
And were those documents sent out to us?
So the long-term care reopening plan, the information was emailed out to everyone on our distribution list, all the administrators and other contacts that we have for all the facilities. The long-term care reopening plan has the information on the infection preventionist. I think all the associations mailed it out as well, and it has a link to the template. The monitoring what the guidance says is that the monitoring tools to be used by facilities can be something the department provides or approves. As Paula stated earlier, we have pulled some together that we're going to send out today as monitoring tools that facilities can use, or they can adapt something along those lines.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Go ahead, caller.
Yes, sir. Can you tell me the approximate date that the long-term care opening plan went out to us?
Yes, I can. Wait. No, I can't. I don't have, It would have been so I think our email actually was delayed in being sent out. So I think our email went out, I believe, last Monday or Tuesday.
Okay.
Not certain of that.
How do we find it? Okay, so.
I think I just cut her off. Sorry.
Caller, if you have a follow-up question on that, we're sorry we cut you off. Would you email us, send an email to ltc@health.ok.gov?
So that's all of our questions for today. We're looking at our next session, and at present, we are thinking about going to every other week. That may change as we discuss with leadership on Friday, but right now, the next session will be July 8th from 1 to 2:30. We'll make a decision. If it's going to be the first, we'll let you know in plenty of time to do that. So thanks for all the calls. We're glad you joined us today. We hope you stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.